The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. We are taping this segment. We're recording it outside. That's why you got the background noise. And we're at the heart of Jerusalem. We're at the YMCA right across from the King David Hotel on King David Street. And I'm here with Dr. Elat Mazar, someone that we've worked with for over 10 years, 12 years, since 2006. 2006, and also with Trumpet contributor Brad McDonald, so he'll be chiming in here and there. But first, before we get to the archaeology, we're at the YMCA, which I don't think our listeners know, but this is one of our favorite places to meet, and mostly because when you set up a meeting, you suggest the YMCA. So tell our listeners why it is that you like to meet here at this this historic location.
It's a beautiful building, and gives you a very pleasant feeling to sit either outside or inside. There is a restaurant, but you don't have to be there. You just have to enjoy the building itself, and it's in the center of Jerusalem, as you just said. I appreciate the atmosphere here, and I believe that you kind of adopted that idea as well. Yeah. It's an option to sit inside and feel. So it's recommended when people come to Jerusalem, go also see this very special building,
right,
which was built in the 30s. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you say, partly it's my doing as well. If you go back to those early years, 2006, 2007, 2008, a lot of times our crew would just stay next door at the Eldon Hotel. So it was just right across the road, and we would suggest the YMCA because the Eldon doesn't really have a nice area to meet. This has a really nice open courtyard, a nice restaurant, as you say. There's nice places to meet on the inside as well. How many times do you think we've probably met here over the years?
Dozens of times. And also inside. I mean, the restaurant is no big deal, but again, the building. Yeah. And it's also an option. There is a 40-meter height tower that you can go up and see the view of Jerusalem around.
Right.
This is a fantastic thing. And once in a while, they have these huge bells that are giving some music, but then it's very rare that you have the opportunity to listen to that concert.
Yeah.
I think that there is a very few people, I don't know, that can play the bells at the top of the tower.
Right.
But then the view is beautiful, the place is beautiful, so it's recommended.
Yeah, I forget who it was a few years ago, but a couple of students, this was when we were living in the German colony, and they said that this was when they were digging for you during the day, and then they were doing their studies at night, and several of them said that they came here fairly often just to find a place to study. And as you say, they could go up in the tower or stay out here in the courtyard area. So,
right. So
it's a beautiful, a very historic place. But what our listeners really want to hear is about your work here in Jerusalem. And we've talked a lot about what we've done in years past. And I think first, just to maybe give us the bigger picture from just this past year, because this really has, even just the last 6 or 7, 8 months, it really has been, I think, a big year for you personally, and also for your work, and certainly for us, supporting your dig or the excavation the way that we did this last time, the fact that we now have an exhibit that's opening in Edmond, the newspaper coverage that you've gotten here and internationally. Maybe you can start by just telling us how the first 6 months of 2018 compare to some of the work you've done over the last several decades.
Well, the last season was in 2013. It was a very successful season, just as the seasons before. We excavate in the most important places in Jerusalem. This is the City of David at the summit and the Ophel area. And each time we go back to the site, we get We excavate for several months, and then we get so important results every time. We didn't have the opportunity to go, although we tried very hard. There were many obstacles which prevented us from going back to the site as we wanted. After 2013, we were not allowed to do that.
It was a five-year layoff, basically.
That's it. Yeah. This was a torture because we know that we, so much that we have to, it's not complete,
right.
But because it will never complete. We don't intend to complete, but we want to do certain things that we know that we want to do. So this was the continuing excavation, the excavations at the Ophel. This was something that we wanted so much, we were not allowed to. And the 2018, we got this opportunity, not everything we wanted, but also part of it. And thanks to your support, we could do it. Otherwise, I didn't see this opportunity coming true. I mean, becoming. So it's this was a great year, and although we excavated relatively short time, this was not, 2 months and a half.
Right.
Our results are enormous.
Yeah.
Just the results from the cave are so important.
Right.
About everything that we have studied from the last days of Jerusalem in the Second Temple period. How people were living here, getting this. So we are really bringing the history of Jerusalem alive in a tangible way of a state that people not only know about it from historical sources, the Bible, just as Josephus, and get things to be people. Now people can really touch and see whatever these historical sources are talking about, and this is the strength of archaeology that we still feel we can hugely contribute.
And the way that it came together, just going back to December, leading into the excavation, it all happened very fast, as I recall, about the church coming in and saying that I think we, because it was a shorter dig, I think we were able to think more seriously about financing it ourselves.
Well, I can tell you something. I was quite disappointed and upset. It takes quite a bit to make me upset to that extent, but
because the other funding didn't go through, is that what you're talking about?
Because we came to a position that we were allowed to go.
Oh,
we
right.
got the license in hand, and suddenly I didn't have the fund.
Right.
So this was something I was not used to, because we were struggling to have the license.
Right.
And when we got the license, suddenly we didn't have the fund, and then your phone came and you surprised me. This was a huge, fantastic surprise. To say, we think it over and we think that we'll go ahead with it. And this was so important because, first, to make it happen just as it is. But then again, we were not in the field for almost 5 years.
Right.
And this was something that was, it's much too much. We were out of the field, especially that we want to continue, right? We have a very important plan to continue revealing First Temple period remains of King Solomon's palace. Very important. So us being away from the field, this was very stressful. So your phone at that night telling me, my father and I, and we decided, we've thought about it, and maybe this time we will not only bring the students and encourage the work, etc., but we will fund it. This was a great thing. This was a breakthrough, which you did. And I guess, and I want to hope, that the excavations themselves didn't disappoint you, right?
Not at all. We were very, it's hard to compare, and you don't want to make it sound like the support we provided in 2013 or 2012 or the impact that it had on the students then, that it was substantial. It changed their lives. And yet, I know Brent and Chris have been at all of those digs, or at least the last several in Chris's case, and they talked about just how special this one really was and how they felt like it was really blessed, and that there were just so many, even though it was in a short period of time, there were just some amazing things that happened, not least of which, even though the Isaiah bulla wasn't discovered during this excavation, it was revealed during the excavation, and that happened just a few weeks into the excavation. And I think it just really electrified the students to where they saw it on the front page of the Jerusalem Post. They realized all the more that they were involved in something really special, And I think that momentum that they had early on in the dig, it carried with them right through to the end of the dig in March.
But it may surprise you, you know how? Because I didn't feel it that way. You know, from now, you said it, like 12 years now,
yeah.
We are in the same partnership, and students at 2006,
right.
Three students came over,
right.
And then it only grew every season and more students came.
Yeah.
I do not recall any of these times that the students from the Ambassador College came without enthusiasm and passion and hard work. And I remember each and every one of them of all these seasons, and it was always with such a hard work and passion and devotion, regardless of the finds. I mean, we had at the time important finds each season. I mean, excavating the summit of the City of David. We had fantastic, and we have hard conditions. It's not like easy work.
Right.
Remember, we were working through winter when it was snowing,
right.
And still we worked,
yeah.
Right? In the tunnel and so on. We worked all the time. When it's so hot and when it's so cold, we go and excavate. Once we get a chance, we go on excavating. Always, the students are fantastic. They are so really devoted and passionate. So I don't know about finding the bull-eye or this time funding the excavations, but the students are great, period, no matter what.
Well, for sure. There's no question that every phase we've been on has been a life-changing experience for the people from our church who are involved in it.
But you know what? We have other workers with hard workers, and they're doing such a fantastic work on a dig, and we have other volunteers. It's not just the students from the college that are coming, and it's much larger than that,
right.
But the contribution of the students of the day, it's entirely different and makes a whole difference,
yeah.
So when I come to think about the excavations and the project we had without the students from the college, I say, okay, we would have managed. It's not like nothing would have been done. No, it's not the case. But it's a big difference if you have such contributors, partners that you know that share the same enthusiasm and such hard work.
Yeah.
It's a huge difference that makes a difference.
Right. So before we get to you summarizing this past excavation, the Isaiah bulla was revealed in February, right. End of February, earlier this year. So how did the coverage of that, I mean, in a way, because of the missing piece on that bulla, I mean, the Hezekiah bulla, that is without question, that was King Hezekiah of Judah. There's some question still about Isaiah, but it seems like, and you can refresh my memory if it wasn't this way, but it seems like there was more publicity for Isaiah even than there was for King Hezekiah a couple years ago. Is that the case, or?
Well, it depends. Many people are, in a way, it depends what these personas are meaning to you. I mean, people are enthusiastic, of course, about King Hezekiah. This is a definite thing, no shadow of a doubt about this.
Right.
But when you come to the prophet Isaiah, yes or no, we have this problematic, huge problem of yes or no, the bulla, you know, the slip pressure, the bulla of the prophet Isaiah. But if it is, so it's a big thing. Like, but I believe that more believers are relates more to the prophet Isaiah himself as a personality,
right.
Being a prophet means more to more people than the king himself,
yeah.
Which can be understandable. But it's more coming, I would say, from a religious attitude and approach than any other significant.
Right.
As an archaeologist, of course. It is too, if it is, we have this seal impression of the prophet Isaiah, of course, archaeologically speaking, this is outstanding by all means, imaginary finds to find the two.
Right.
And of course, King Hezekiah itself, by itself, it's fantastic.
Right.
And just to add to it, the option that we are having, these two people, in light of the Bible as a historical source, telling us in this case so much about these two specific people,
right.
And their very special relationship, that impact so much about what happened next. And so this is almost imaginary.
Yeah. So were you happy about the newspaper coverage of the Isaiah Bola?
Look, well, I do like to believe that we came forward revealing what we have, revealing the difficulties just as well. We never said that's it 100%, like buy it as it is and that will be it. We as scientists, really, this is important all the way through, to come forward and present what we have. Mm-hmm. And if we have, and we still have, huge difficulty with the seal impression of the prophets, yes or no, Isaiah, we want everybody to know about it, but to share it with us,
right,
and to share the difficulties all together.
And what has been the reaction from the academic, scholarly community? Has it been kind of split, where half maybe are they were convinced it's Isaiah the prophet, and the other half are maybe not so sure?
Exactly so. Yeah. And I believe people as well, you know, general people. Not specifically archaeologists. Some will say, still we have our doubts and not, we are not really buying it. And because we give a heavy weight to the doubts, which they are entirely entitled to do so. And people say, what are the chances that this such a Isaiah Navi, sort of saying we missed the last word, but still it's like more than 75% of the word Navi, the prophet, that is there. So what are the chances that this is somebody else, not the prophet, and is kind of very slim. So of course it is the Isaiah the prophet. So I believe that it will stay that way until we go on excavating, find more seed impressions. One or more will be of a yes or no, the prophet Isaiah, let's see. And more seed impressions of the king himself, and maybe other kings as well. And who knows? This is Jerusalem. Look, what we have excavated is, in compared to the area, is such a little tiny thing, right? So if we open the area that we want to do,
yeah,
which is untouched, sealed,
right,
what we're going to have there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll come back to that later about the future and the next excavation. Moving on from the Isaiah Bola, maybe you can summarize for our listeners the you mentioned how short the last excavation was, 2.5 months. What were some of the most significant finds or revelations from that excavation earlier this year?
We excavated in two areas. We completed the excavations in the Byzantine building, which was important because this is the same building that we had. In 2013, we found the Byzantine treasure, the medallion, the gold medallion with the Jewish symbols. It was very important to excavate there. And then the excavations in the cave. This is a 14x7 meters cave that was sealed for nobody to know about for 2,000 years. This is something that is hard to understand as it is, right in the center of the Ophel area, 50 meters to the south of the Temple Mount, a very focused, important place, and it was hidden for 2,000 years. How come? So this is a fact. And then to reveal what's in it, and what we found in it, by hard work, stratified layers, that the last one is what the rebellions, the people that stay in Jerusalem, on their very last days, even the very, very last days of year 4, meaning just before the destruction of Jerusalem,
right,
by days, they try to hide there. And they try to, I don't know what they plan to do, maybe really try to rescue their life. And eventually, I don't know what happened, but they did some arrangements in order to hide there, and it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we know? We found dozens of coins from the last years of the rebellions, like 66 up to 70, including dozens of like 20-something coins from year 4,
mm-hmm,
year 4 itself.
Yeah.
And it's not a hoard, like people were leaving that there. It was spread all over in a field. So during year 4, they still didn't lose the hope to build some hidden place.
Yeah.
In order to, of course, to hide there in the cave. And they used all kinds of fields, including year 4 coins. And that was it So it's like the very, very, very last minute before they were leaving Jerusalem for good for centuries.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. And that got lots of positive publicity as well. And that too is covered by all the papers here in Israel and quite a few overseas as well.
You know, we know about these days, horrible days in Jerusalem,
mainly
described by Josephus Flavius, okay? The Jewish historian that is describing these days in Jerusalem quite in detail.
Yeah.
Horrible
yeah.
starvation, fear, violence, a horrible life in Jerusalem in these days. Very detailed described by Josephus. And then when you come to reveal it in archaeology, and then you see where these people tried to hide, what they took. You feel their fear. You see their stress. This is the strength of archaeology again, that gives you some idea that you can touch, that you can feel, that you just can imagine when you read the written document. But when you see it, it's amazing by itself.
Yeah.
So what about? Are there any other finds? Like, there was some pottery. Have we processed anything else from that?
The coins from year four and from these 4 years are added, I mean, are mixed with other finds. Nothing is later than 70. This is the assemblage of pottery vessels, mainly some stone weights, some stone vessels. You know, in this time, people were using stone vessels which don't get impurity. So they used a lot of stone vessels just, you know, after they purified, they wanted to get the use of the they get use of these stone vessels. So we found also fragments of these stone vessels. All the assemblage, which is a regular assemblage we know of from Jerusalem in its last days of the Second Temple period before the Roman destruction. So it's not just the coins we found. We found the coins in these among mixed with this kind of assemblage.
When we come back, we'll talk to Dr. Elat Mazar about the new exhibit, Seals of Isaiah and King Hezekiah Discovered. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and persons that at one time were known to us only from Scripture. The Bible is real, and you need to pay attention to it. Call now and request your free copy of The Authority of the Bible. This lesson, which comes from the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, blows the dust off your Bible. You will learn how to mine the treasures buried in the greatest book on earth. You can discover its secrets and enrich your life today. For more information, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
And we are back, and as I said earlier, we're taping these segments in downtown Jerusalem, just outside of the YMCA, across the street from the King David Hotel. And the King David Hotel is where we'll be hosting the reception. We're recording this particular segment 2 days before the reception on June 10th. And the reception, of course, is the grand opening, or it signifies the grand opening of the Seals of Isaiah and King Hezekiah Discovered exhibit in Edmond, Oklahoma. And as most of our listeners, I think, understand, the exhibit started June 10th with a dual reception, a live transmission from Edmond to Jerusalem and from Jerusalem to Edmond. Before I talk about the reception specifically, you've been sifting through some of the brochures and pictures and the content that you've supplied Brad McDonald with, and that we've accumulated ourselves as well, that's going into the exhibit. And maybe you could give our listeners your first impressions of how everything has come together, and how successful you think the exhibit in Oklahoma will be.
Well, the impression is great. I can't think about better way and better hints given these two seal impressions in order to be presented. I'm full of enthusiasm and really admiration of what has been done. Like I told you, and I can still say it all the time, you did the utmost possible effort in order to give these two seal impressions their right position in the history of archaeology. I mean, these are archaeological finds that are very rare, no matter what, by themselves. But to add items from the same period, from Israel, from sites like Lachish, from Jerusalem, from other places, and show people not only the items themselves, but what can be accompanied, give them an idea, mm-hmm. and of course put an important emphasis on the documents that are already known from this specific king, Hezekiah time. It's not like we have other kings that we can really show archaeological finds, such as Hezekiah Tunnel, just things that, and of course the Hezekiah inscription, the Silwan inscription, that are supporting the biblical narrative. In the city of Jerusalem, you can walk half a kilometer way underground in this Hezekiah tunnel, something that King Hezekiah did. And of course, its strength, it's not just a water enterprise to excavate, to dig in the bedrock, such an underground tunnel, but there is an inscription indicating that such an enormous project was done. And of course, it's very easy to relate it to King Hezekiah. That's what he did. Described in the Bible, but not only in the Bible. It's supported by the Assyrian annals that we have in hand.
That's right.
It's the prisms that were found in several places. They're also found in Nineveh. So it's presented in London, in the Israeli Museum, and in the States, in Chicago. So it's and there, the Assyrian king, Sanherib, is describing how he conquered so many cities in the state of Judea, etc.
Yeah.
But he doesn't say what the Bible already said before, right? He doesn't say that he captured King Hezekiah. He doesn't say that he really succeeded to capture Jerusalem, which he did not.
Right, yeah.
So he says, like, you know, I captured him like a bird in a cage. Yeah. Fine, but you did not capture Jerusalem. And he says the real thing, which the Bible already told us.
So that that's saying, what happened. You're saying those secular records square with the Bible account.
Absolutely. And the exhibition
yeah.
is very wisely showing.
Yeah.
You brought the prism. You showed the reliefs of King Hezekiah, you know, this of the King Sanherib describing how he conquered Lachish and so on, which
right.
he did.
Right.
Not Jerusalem, Lachish,
right.
one of the other cities, but Lachish was a very important city, like second to Jerusalem.
Right.
So he does. So not just the seal impressions themselves, you show the material
mm-hmm.
and you show the Assyrian documents
yeah.
and the relief from Nineveh.
Yeah.
And so I believe that you did whatever I could have think about. I couldn't have done it even better. And I think, you know what? Nobody could. You did an awesome, most beautiful, professional, wide, thoughtful, invested exhibition. And I really cheer to what you've done. I'm very happy that you've got the chance to do it and you fulfilled it to utmost possible fantastic way.
Well, thank you for saying that, and that's a perfect lead-in to Brad McDonald here. He was the curator for the exhibit, and these last 2 weeks have been pretty hectic for you as you've been from Edstone, England, over to Edmond to help set up the exhibit, to make sure everything's up and running. And then now you just got to Jerusalem late last night, and maybe before you talk about the exhibit itself and the story that it tells, to continue on from what Dr. Mazar just brought out. Maybe you can touch on just how these last 2 weeks have gone and getting everything together.
Okay. It's been, like you said, it's been quite busy. It's been a little surreal. But at the same time, everything really did come together so well. There's a lot of work to do, and everything just fell into place. I definitely feel like, you know, I feel like there were miracles along the way. It could have been a lot more complicated than it was. So we've just had a great team of people at Edstone, at headquarters. A lot of people worked really hard to make this happen. And I think it's Friday afternoon, and we launched a website yesterday, and all of the artifacts are in cabinets in Edmund, and everything's ready to go. So I think we're in a good position.
Okay. Well, so getting back to what she brought out about the secular record,
yep,
and the, you know, what the Bible reveals, maybe you can go from that and to just explain the narrative of the exhibit. We know the artifacts are amazing.
Right.
And the Armstrong Auditorium is magnificent.
Oh, yeah.
That's a magnificent venue for it.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful setting, and the artifacts in the cabinets, a stunning display. But what's the story that you're trying to tell from the moment someone walks into the exhibit,
okay,
and when they walk out?
Sure. So the first thing people will see when they walk into the exhibit is a pretty large map identifying the extent of the Assyrian Empire in the late 8th century. And within the first two cabinets, we basically introduce the context, so the Assyrians and the Judeans. We introduce the state of Judah and King Hezekiah, and we talk a little bit about King Hezekiah's father, Ahaz. And then we also introduce King Hezekiah and Isaiah. We just give a little biographical sketch. We have a nice map of Jerusalem at the time of King Hezekiah. And then from there, we transition into Sennacherib and the Assyrian army kind of falling onto little Judah. And as Dr. Mazar mentioned, we have the Sennacherib prism. That's the one that talks about where Sennacherib talks about having King Hezekiah trapped like a caged bird. So we have a terrific replica of that. We also have a replica of the Babylonian Chronicle, I think that's what it was called, and then a replica of the Azaka inscription as well. Christopher Eames made those replicas. They turned out terrific. But both of those replicas, the Azaka replica, for example, that talks about King Hezekiah is talking about how he conquered the Judean city of Azaka, and he records it on this replica right there for people to see. So it's just all the way through, we've tried to juxtapose Assyrian records with the biblical records and really just bring the story of these artifacts to life.
Yeah.
And then peppered all the way through the storyboards and the maps and the timelines and the little mini documentaries, we have the artifacts themselves. And then we put little artifact descriptions beside each artifact, explaining what the artifact is.
Yeah.
We have about 40 artifacts. They all come from the 8th century, so they all come from the time of Hezekiah. Some of the coolest artifacts are, we have iron arrowheads that were used during the siege of Lachish. So they were found during excavations of Lachish. They were found in the siege ramp, if I'm not correct. We also have sling stones that we used during the siege of Lachish. So it's pretty neat to think that these arrowheads and these sling stones, you know, they may have been used to kill a man. I mean, it's kind of awful as well, but they're 2,700 years old and we have them with us today, so.
Wow, and so for the grand opening, this reception that we have in Edmund and in Jerusalem, maybe I can shift it back to Dr. Mazar here, but well, our listeners would probably know, most of them, that the first half of it's gonna be broadcast from Jerusalem and you'll be speaking, and then the second half will come from Edmund, and that'll be my father speaking there, and we've got some videos kind of interspersed throughout. But what has it been like preparing for the reception on June 10th?
Well, I didn't do such a thing before. Yes, this is the simple answer. You did something that I first experienced. I don't think that it is an archaeological event presenting such an important items nobody did before. I do hope that it will, in a way, raise some awareness of, you know, what you have invested in it, especially caring, passion, showing how important it is to so many people in the world, touching the Bible so directly. The connection between archaeology of the Holy Land as we execute and the biblical narratives, important to so many people in the world. I believe that somehow people in Israel do not really fully aware of how important it is. So I'm very happy about this assistant that we got from you guys, right? A little bit shaking the awareness of that issue. So I'm very honored to be part of it, and surely, of course, do my best. But the thing is that we got this chance, and you are fully executing this chance to do the best out of it. I'm sure that so many people in the world are going to enjoy of what you've done and our partnership making it done. So this makes a good feeling to all of us, I guess, as I can see your faces. So Mr. Brett McDonald just said that so many people took part making it come true. Talented people, hardworking people, people who cares, so many people. And I'm sure that the result is the best. So we are part of a major effort of so many people, which makes it feel very good. So I'm sure it will be a big success, and people will appreciate the results.
Well, we had some pretty good publicity 2 weeks before the reception, announcing the reception on June 10th, and we've had invitations go out, and you have some family and friends that are also going to attend the ceremony. And then there's, I think, 8 or 10 journalists that will be there. So hopefully the story will continue to get out there even after the reception on June 10th. And hopefully more, as you say, will be made aware of this tremendous effort to put these two bullae on display for the summer in Oklahoma. And hopefully, too, when they come back to Israel, at whatever point that is, they'll be given a really choice location in the Israel Museum or wherever. And I would just add, we have had really wonderful support from the Antiquities Authority and from Israel Museum. A lot of people have really helped us, not just you and the people at our church, but a lot of people right here in Israel. And even the ones that have there've been a lot of people that are unable to make the reception that have sent us notes saying, you know, I'm sorry I can't be there. I really hope your project or your exhibit is a tremendous success. So already we couldn't be happier with the way that it's impacted Israel, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I feel like, as you mentioned, with Antiquities Authority, the City of David, Israel Museum, I feel like our relationships with some of those institutions have really grown and improved through this experience. And it's just been nice getting to know some of those people, just having email contact with a couple of people at the City of David or working with Allegra from the Antiquities Authority. It's just been really positive all around. So hopefully we can do more projects with some of these people in the future.
The only thing left to do is to get you over to Edmond so you can see the exhibit yourself.
This is the hardest part, huh? Until now it was...
That's harder. That's harder than finding the Hezekiah bullet.
Yeah, excavating. Yeah, this is a piece of cake.
Digging you out of Jerusalem is harder than digging Hezekiah.
Exactly. But,
never say
are
never.
So, no, it's never say never, but people are most welcome and invited to come over. And it's not me that we're talking about. We're talking about ancient remains of and history of Jerusalem. And you cannot take Jerusalem to Edmond after all, right? So
right.
You have to come over to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing, to come over to Jerusalem, get this fantastic exhibit impressions and carry it with you in order to come and see the site itself and see Jerusalem for yourself. And I believe that this is just an appetizer, a very important one, when you are doing it in Edmond and Oklahoma, and eventually it will end in Jerusalem. But people should come and see for themselves and feel the city and feel the town, the city of Jerusalem. And I believe this is the next step of so many people.
Yes. Well, it's a tremendous honor for us to have a little bit of Jerusalem in Edmond for the next many months. And as you say, it'll be a great advertisement for our, for anyone that goes through and views that exhibit. Hopefully it will, as you say, really give them encouragement to make the venture over to Jerusalem at some point. So let's talk about the future then. The exhibit will project ahead. Hopefully it'll be a tremendous success in Oklahoma. What are you hoping? You mentioned at the start of the program today the last remaining section to be excavated on the Ophel. What are you hoping for that? When do you hope it will start? And maybe you could just give us any details on the next excavation that you can or that you know at this point.
Look, we've started a new phase back in 2009. This was the support of Daniel Mintz and Meredith Berkman together from New York to help execute new excavations at the Ophel in order to reveal more of the Solomonic Wall. And that's what we did in all, and not only to excavate and do the processing of the finds and the publication results and publish it, but also to arrange the area for the public to visit and to get explanation, etc., to make it accessible. And that's what we did very successfully back in 2009 and 10, where these seal impressions were found. This was the day, the time. And then we continued. We had three phases. This was the first one. And then, in light of the successful first season, we continued in 2012 to a second part. And this was continued over 2013. So we did the second phase and reveal more of the Solomonic Wall, which comprised of several buildings, showing that the Solomonic construction of this area is preserved and extend up to 4 or 5 meters high. So, and we had a third phase in order to conclude it. And this phase we did not succeed to execute yet. And that's what we need to do in order to have a complete line showing the Solomonic Wall, very major part of the Acropolis, the Ophel in Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew, Ophel meaning an Acropolis, the mm-hmm. high place, yeah. the royal complex. Okay, this is part of the royal complex, and the next phase is even more intriguing than the previous ones, because in the previous ones we had the city gate, a huge tower, fantastic things, a royal building, and more buildings, and the fortress, projecting a tower. But now what we are expecting in the next phase is to find a major part of King Solomon's palace. Okay, I'm talking about expecting. I'm not promising anything. I never promised anyone nothing, because it's an archaeology, right? But until now, we were right about our expectations. Yeah. Because they are not just imaginary expectations. We're talking about our very tied and knowledge years and years of studying this area. So we are quite convinced that what we're going to reveal in the next third phase, hopefully to get the chance to execute, is part of King Solomon's palace complex, not just a city wall. And that's why I believe that we should get the chance to reveal that part. And this is what I'm looking for, excavating area E, at the eastern end of the Ophel area, and that's it's not a large area, by the way, but very much promising, a very promising area.
Do you think it would last longer than the last excavation phase?
Yes, absolutely. And more wet sifting. Like, we did not do any wet sifting, because when we excavated the cave, there was no need, and the Byzantine structure. But we will wet sift a lot.
So that makes it more tedious.
Wow, yeah. This is going to raise the fund, but it's worthwhile. Yeah. Look what we've found in the 2009 when we wet sifted and found King Hezekiah's bulla.
And is it also something where you have to dig deeper?
Much deeper, yeah. Because the bedrock falls there. It falls quite rapidly also in our two phases areas. Right. But there, as we know, the bedrock falls much more, and the chances of well-preserved remains from that period are much higher.
Right. So the area is not much bigger than the previous area, but there's just more to do, a lot more to do.
It's even a smaller area, yeah. Like 25 on 25 meters. The area is quite small, but its potential is very high, very great.
Do you think you'd need about the same number of people as the last dig, or a little bit more, a little bit less?
A little bit more, especially if we want to wet sift, and we have to be very much more meticulous. I mean, it's a difference. You have to be more, I would say, many more people, that's for sure. It's the same method of excavating, but sometimes it's a bit different when you excavate a Byzantine structure that is well preserved and so on, and when you have to go under a layer and layers by layers by layers as early as, you know, that goes 20 meters deep.
And so do you wet sift on site? You wet sift as
we
you go?
Sometimes when we get, when we didn't have the other option, we built a facility of wet sifting at the site, you know, at the end, you know. Not more than once, like it is when we excavated the city of David, we did. I'm not so sure. Sometimes we sent our some of the materials sometimes to the wet sifting facility in Emek Tzurim, not so far. Well, if to that matter, I do prefer to have it near the site, but it's not always possible because the site is relatively small, not enough room for such a running water option to work.
Any idea on when you hope that will start? No, you don't know yet?
Well, we wait. We waited the 5 years. We wait. But hopefully, more and more people understand the importance, the potential, the need, and it will be a great push for also to prepare the whole site of the Ofel, to have it renewed and prepared for people to visit.
Yeah.
Because as it's now, it's not that prepared.
All right. Well, when we come back, we'll conclude today's program by talking about some of your personal likes and dislikes, some of your innermost thoughts about life and what you enjoy doing when you're not out excavating or in your office researching or publishing. So she's really nervous about this.
No, it's not. I see sparkles in your eyes like you're expecting me to say, I don't know, to say what. Look.
Hold on. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with some concluding thoughts on today's show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
All right, thank you for joining us today. We're back here just outside the YMCA with Dr. Elat Mazar, along with the curator of the upcoming exhibit, Brad McDonald. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to conclude today's show by getting you, hopefully, to tell us what it is you like doing when you're not busy with archaeology.
Well, I hope I'm not going to disappoint you. There is nothing that is so outstanding or special about my life. Okay, it's archaeology is a major part of what I do and think, and my kind of professional, which is kind of my life, right? And the other thing, just I believe that with all of us, maybe, most of us at least, it's the family, that's it. The family is always, it's not only part of my life. It's a major part of my life. I can't see anything of what I did and do and probably will do without the family. Family is a basic and major part of what I care about.
And your children are all grown, but how they all four of them live in Jerusalem? Is that right?
I have four children and three daughters. So my daughter, the elder one, she's turned to be 40, you see,
right.
Celebrating. And
three sons, you mean?
The three sons are younger.
Okay, right.
They're 27, 26, 23. So they are grown up, as you say. They have their own lives. They study, they work, they have their lives. But still, you know, children are children forever and ever. And family all together. So I'm enjoying my family and the family life, even when I was a student, you know, since day one. This was my grandfather just as well.
Right.
Family life is just the other half of what we have with archaeology. And altogether, this is like family life is not 50%, it's 100%, and the archaeology thing is like another 100%. So we live like a full 200% life.
Two lives in one.
Exactly.
But for you personally, you don't have any hobbies just that you like to do on your own personal time? Like let's say if you were reading something that's not scholarly or not about archaeology, do you read about things that you're not really specializing in?
Well, I read all the time, especially before I go to sleep. I do read about something else. I do read newspapers. I do read, but mostly I read professional stuff. But I do enjoy life in a most ordinary way, okay?
Yeah.
I enjoyed, the dog. I enjoyed the kids. I enjoyed the garden. I enjoyed the house. I enjoy my home
right. Very
much. I have the library of my grandfather's, the archive of my grandfather's, and I enjoy very simple life,
yeah. You
know? Enjoying simple life is an art by itself.
I can attest to the fact that she loves animals. I remember the story you told us years ago about there's all kinds of stray cats in Jerusalem, and I'm sure there's plenty of people here that don't care about them because there's so many. But there was that one time where the two were sick, I think, or injured, and you took them up, brought them in, fed them, took care of them.
Well, this is an obvious thing, you know.
Yeah.
All the time we have dogs, we have cats. It's not like one and one or one or two cats.
Right.
It's not like I have plenty. It's not a zoo. No, no, no. But we care about animals.
Yeah.
Altogether, if you ask me about my life, I do enjoy these simple things in life that makes your life so good.
Yeah, and the other one thing I would add, going back to things that you read outside of your area of expertise, you mentioned the newspapers, and you obviously we don't have to get into politics and that sort of thing here, but every time that we've been at dinner or we've met here at the YMCA and we've talked about news of the world or what's happening, you know, around the world, and a lot of Israelis are this way, more so I think than Americans. They really do. They are more aware of what's happening in the world. Certainly, what's happening here in the Middle East, but even in America or in Europe, and that's always been something that's been a nice little bonus feature to our relationship. Is that after we talk business, or after we talk about our relationship, or after we talk about an excavation, we'll talk about the news, we'll talk about politics, and it's always a very interesting and lively discussion.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's about all that we have time for today. I wish we could go on and on, but thank you for being so generous with your time and for taking time out of this beautiful afternoon ahead of our new exhibit to give what I know our listeners will really be fascinated by. So you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.